Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. On Tuesday, Florida Governor Jeb Bush signed into law a bill that allows ordinary citizens in that state to use force, deadly force, against a perceived attacker. They don't have to flee. Even if they're able to, they can legally fight back without fear of prosecution and with what could be deadly consequences. Prosecutors must presume they had a good reason to pull the trigger. It's a big change from the days after Columbine High School, when a shooting rampage by two students sparked cries for stronger gun control laws. These days, what's in vogue is the NRA-backed idea that the best defense against a gun is another gun, loaded and ready, anywhere, any place. Advocates say the courthouse shootings in Texas and Georgia would not have happened if the right people had been armed. They say young lives could have been saved at Red Lake Indian Reservation in Minnesota if other guns had been on hand to fire back. Critics strongly disagree. They say giving citizens more places to carry guns and more freedom to use them will lead to a dirty, hairy society where no one is safe. Tonight on Point, Florida's new Stand Your Ground gun law, and the new national push to let citizens pull guns much more freely in self-defense. You can join the conversation. Are you ready for the Florida version of self-defense, where gun-toting citizens can take matters into their own hands anytime, anywhere they feel threatened? Is this a braver and safer new world, or a return to the Wild West? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Tallahassee, Florida's state capital, is Steve Bosquet, Deputy Bureau Chief for the St. Petersburg Times there. Steve, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So it's called Stand Your Ground legislation. Floridians already had the right to fire, in their homes at least, if they proved that they could not escape from a deadly threat. What exactly is the change here?
Well, the change really, to hone in on it very specifically, they did two things with this law. They basically put into statute the so-called castle doctrine, which is your home is your castle, and you have the right to stand your ground. Court decisions, the NRA and others and some legislators felt court decisions had been a little bit unclear on that point.
Okay.
But, as you indicated in your introduction, this bill takes the the right to self-defense to in effect, into the public square. The legislation actually contains the phrase, any place you have a right to be. You have no duty to retreat if you're threatened. Now, lost in this debate, I think, a little bit, is you have to be a law-abiding citizen in every other respect. For example, if you're there with a firearm, you have to be licensed to carry one.
All right. And in Florida, and so, as I understand, they've issued something like a million right-to-carry permits in the last several years.
No, well, the latest statistics I looked at today when I knew I was coming on your program, and
yes,
according to the state website, there are about 337,000 people in Florida with concealed carry permits, according to the state figures.
Okay,
through March
different
31st,
figures. So. All right, fair enough.
But anyway, there was a great debate on this issue. Mainly for the two reasons, the idea of taking this self-defense concept into the public square, and number two, the idea that if you did use a firearm or use deadly force, you're immune from civil or criminal prosecution. The opponents raised the following argument, the following scenario, a fight between rival gangs, on a street in one of Florida's cities escalates, a person gets shot and killed, and the person who did the shooting can't be charged with murder.
But you're saying that probably wouldn't apply because they're presumably not licensed to carry concealed firearms?
That's right. But the opponents of this bill think that there's going to be a situation that's going to happen in Florida that's going to be where violence may escalate as a result of this legislation. I want to point something out, which
yes,
is that this bill passed by a 39-0 vote in the Senate, which means even the most liberal Democrats in Florida voted for this bill in the Senate, some of them thinking it would never get beyond that. But then the House passed it by a 94-20 vote.
Overwhelming in both houses.
Overwhelming in both houses. And the governor signed it the day before yesterday with the NRA's chief lobbyist on hand to witness the bill signing.
Now, I want to be sure I understand. If it applies in your home. Someone comes in and you feel a threat, blast away. But it also applies, what, if you're in your car, if you're in the street, if you're in the supermarket, if you're at a soccer game.
Yeah, well, it does if it's lawful to have a firearm in those kinds of places. I don't think, I'm frankly not sure if you've got the legal right in this state to carry a firearm into a grocery store.
There may still be some out-of-bounds places, though, as we've seen in other states, the NRA is pushing to expand the turf into which people can carry guns. I've been struck here, Steve, I'm looking in the Miami Herald, another paper down your way, and this was an editorial in Miami Herald, and they really got fired up about this. They say, let me read just a little bit from the Herald's editorial. The legislature has gone hip-hop, brutally violent machismo sentiments usually associated with urban rap lyrics have been translated into legislation. Kill them in your castle, kill them in your car, kill them on the streets, kill them in the bar. They say the wimpy notion that a citizen ought to avoid potentially deadly confrontations has been jettisoned in favor of a bill that downright encourages gunplay. Feeling threatened, intimidated, or a little grouchy, go ahead, kill them. Is that over the top, or are Floridians seeing this that way?
Well, there's some real rhetoric in that editorial. I mean, I'll make the point that you have to, under this law, you can meet force with force, but you have to be provoked in a way or threatened with violent force yourself before you can justifiably react in kind. This bill does not, and I suppose that ultimately a judge will decide the question, but this bill does not, even its supporters say, does not legitimize shooting someone because he used a four-letter word or because he, tried to flirt with your wife or something like that. You have the right to, quote, meet force with force, which means if you're violently attacked, you can respond with a violent response. And unlike the current law in Florida, you don't have a duty to retreat. Under current law in Florida and in most places, if you're attacked in public, you are obligated to take all means to avoid escalating the confrontation.
To walk away or run away.
Right. So that's what, and the NRA and their supporters said, why? Why should people, when faced with the imminent attack, why shouldn't they be allowed to defend themselves as fully as they can? That's the crux of the issue.
And it does say here, as I'm reading, that prosecutors must automatically presume that would-be victims feared for their lives if attacked.
Right.
So that grants quite a bit of leeway in leaving the interpretation up to the gun-carrying citizen.
It does, and we're going to have we have in Florida, in a very diverse state, we've got circuits that are known, judicial circuits that are known as liberal circuits, and circuits that are known as very conservative circuits, and you're going to have different interpretations of this law without a doubt, very quickly here in the state.
Steve Bosquet with the St. Petersburg Times, please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation, joining us also from Tallahassee, Florida, Dennis Baxley. He's a Republican state representative who sponsored the bill. He's a funeral director from Ocala, Florida, about 78 miles north of Orlando. He joins us tonight from Tallahassee. Dennis Baxley, representative, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Please give us a sense of your motivation in putting this bill forward, Representative Baxley. What were you searching for here, and did you get it?
Well, I think this is good common sense self-defense, and what it's doing is shifting the presumption of law in defense of victims of violence. And we feel that making a clear line in the sand and letting violent criminals who prey on other people who are weak, let them know that we are going to stand with those victims, and we're not going to ask them to try to run away. We're not going to leave it to a prosecutor to mull over for 60 or 90 days whether or not they should have defense, self-defense type of defense. We're going to put the presumption of law in their favor. And in fact, most violent attacks are not in your home. Some of them are in your car. We have a lot of carjacking incidents today.
Mm-hmm.
And we live in a more violent age, and we need to stand with victims and let them know that the weight of the law will be in their favor.
So in what kind of places, Dennis Baxley, would this then permit Florida citizens to fire back, force with force, if attacked or perceiving a threat?
Well, I think Steve's done a good job of characterizing the fact that what is glazed over by those who have come up with all the hysterical examples is the fact that there's still over 20,000 gun laws in this country that regulate the use of firearms, and there's quite a bit of restriction to when you apply for one of these permits. And it should not escape anyone's attention that less than 0.1% of these permit holders have ever had any kind of problem in making those judgments. So we are empowering the law-abiding citizen. Now, if you're doing anything illegal, if you're trading drugs, if you're street fighting with gangs, most of those people ignore all the laws anyway, so it doesn't apply to them. This is the law-abiding citizen who's doing nothing wrong, who suffers attack. Bar fights, people bring that up. You're not even allowed to bring it. You're committing a felony. You're not protected by this law.
Because you can't bring a gun into a bar.
Those kind of examples. And really, this goes back to 1987 when we passed this. We heard the same hysterical examples of there'd be blood in the streets and Dirty Harry and all these wild hyperboles. And in fact, what happened? We saw violent crime go down over the last 15 years when we stood with victims.
So you're saying stand with victims. What do you think the impact of this legislation will be? What will the consequences be?
I think because of this law, that law-abiding citizens will feel empowered to stand against crime, and that some woman will not be raped because she feels empowered to defend herself, that some child will not be abducted because a person feels empowered to protect their family, and more importantly, their person, if they are realistically under the threat of death or serious bodily injury, that they can stand and defend themselves and know the presumption of law will be in their defense.
Florida's been a bellwether on gun laws before. Do you think this is going to go nationwide, Representative?
I think it is, and actually we're joining a lot of other states. There's really only, we're not really breaking that big of ground because there's only about 10 states that have a duty to retreat. This was something that came along, you know, and those people who feel that the gun is the problem. We feel that violent criminals are the problem.
Representative Baxley, we have to take a short break. Steve Buscay, please stand by. We're talking tonight about Florida's new Stand Your Ground gun law. You can join the conversation. Is this a brave and safer new world or back to the Wild West? 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Florida's new Stand Your Ground, Shoot 'em Dead If Necessary gun law, and the push to let citizens pull their guns and use them much more freely in self-defense. You can join the conversation tonight. Are you ready for the new Florida model, where gun-toting citizens can meet force with force, including deadly force, when they feel threatened? And would you feel safer knowing you could fight back, all guns blazing, when you are scared, when you're threatened? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've been joined from Tallahassee, Florida, by Representative Dennis Baxley, State Representative from Ocala, Florida, who sponsored the legislation that was signed into law on Tuesday by Governor Jeb Bush after being passed overwhelmingly in both houses of the Florida legislature. Steve Buscay is with us. He's Deputy Bureau Chief there, Bureau Chief in Tallahassee for the St. Petersburg Times. We're joined right now from Miami by John Timoney. He is Miami Chief of Police and joins us from the city of Miami. Chief Timoney, thanks for being with us tonight.
Well, thank you. Good evening.
Good evening. Appreciate your joining us. You see the new bill. It's now law. How do you feel about it?
Well, I don't see the need for the law. You know, it seems to be unnecessary. I don't see the clamoring. I don't see the good citizens that use deadly physical force to defend themselves. I don't see them getting indicted or arrested, not in Florida or anywhere else in the United States. And I've not seen it in my 35 years in policing. So I don't understand what the impetus is behind the bill.
But you've got an overwhelming passage in both houses of the legislature there. Your attorney general in Florida came out strongly for it. Prosecutors not opposing it, even as I understand, law enforcement officials such as yourself generally not opposing it. Why not?
Well, first of all, I think this, as best as I can tell, I remember debating the representative about 2 months ago, and when we finished on national television, I figured this will never get passed. And then I get a phone call yesterday morning. It had passed, and so I'm not so sure how it got through. Clearly, there was pressures coming from the NRA and other places, but here's the bottom line. People all across America have always had the right to defend themselves in their homes, and it happens time and time again, and people are exonerated. There isn't any problem. What the representative brought up the last time I spoke to him, he's got a legitimate point that sometimes a good citizen, a legitimate citizen that uses deadly physical force winds up having to wait six months or 9 months to get cleared. Well, that shouldn't be. And so if you want to pass a law that forces a prosecutor, you know, to review the case within 2 or 3 weeks. That's number one. But the whole idea of granting almost total immunity to a homeowner, you know, police officers don't have total immunity. Anytime a police officer discharges his or her weapon, it gets reviewed by the appropriate authorities, the police department, the DA, the grand jury. But the real problem part is when you take it outdoors, this whole notion of stand your ground.
Yeah.
We have been telling people for my 35 years in policing, and long before I started, if you're the victim of a robbery, I mean, just give them, you know, turn over the wallet.
And
walk away. In big cities all across America, in Miami, in New York, I spent my whole career in New York, and
yes,
in Philadelphia, where I spent 4 years.
As police chief,
there are people on the streets, some homeless, some crazy, that confront you on a daily basis.
Mm.
I get confronted on a daily basis. I've got two options. I can go mano a mano with them and let it, you know, go crazy, or I can walk away, call the police, and have them locked up.
Do you think this legislation encourages the mano a mano approach?
Well, it could. Now, I am not one of those alarmists that think there's going to be bloodshed in the street. But what I will tell you is that either some homeowner looking to settle a score with a bad neighbor, or some guy out in the street looking just can't wait to shoot somebody. It's not going to be huge numbers, but you'll see an occasional one or two, and of course it'll be thrown back into the courts and it'll be on court TV, and they'll have panels. Should he, could he, you know.
Yeah, well, we hear it. Representative Baxley, what about it? The chief of police of Miami in your state said this is unnecessary. You need to speed up clearing homeowners if they're caught up in the courts improperly, but you didn't need to go this far, and it's going to encourage that kind of mano-a-mano confrontation in the streets.
Well, I think what's missing in the understanding there is there's very tight limitation, actually, in this bill in the form of meeting force with force. And so that is a deceleration. You know, if somebody yells at you, all you can do is yell back. If somebody pokes you with their finger, all you can do is poke them back. Or if they shove you, you can shove them back. But only if your life is at risk, somebody is attacking you to take your life, and you have reason to believe that you will suffer death or serious personal injury. Those are the very limited circumstances on which you're authorized to stand your ground. And to run away in that setting when somebody is attacking you to kill you is a good way to get shot in the back.
Let me ask you again, the Miami Herald, and I know you don't like their view, but here's what their editorial said. Some loudmouth lunkhead at the kid's soccer game bumps up against you, uses a nasty epithet, reaches into his pocket, and pulls out what could be his BlackBerry. Assume the worst, whip out your AK-47 and empty the banana clip. That's the scenario they're painting.
Again, I would make it clear that we have a clear record of 15 years of permitted to carry weapons, and those people have proved to be the most responsible in our society and are not accelerating these cases. These things happen are hotheads that are not permitted, and if they're carrying a gun, then they are already committing a felony and they are not protected by this bill.
Chief Timoney, are you concerned that citizens may feel their life is threatened by mistake sometime?
Well, by the way, that happens all the time, and it's called a reasonable person standard, and some people have... We all, myself included, have all varying degrees of paranoia.
Sure.
Let me just point out one thing: that the notion that somehow this immunity is limited to permitted gun owners, I think is wrong. We have time and time again, especially in poorer neighborhoods, where store owners are stuck up. They resort and they wind up shoot and kill the guy who's trying to rob them.
Yeah.
Good for them. God bless them.
Well,
They didn't have a permit for the gun.
They didn't have a permit for the gun.
Right. What usually happens is that the shooting is exonerated because it's perfectly legal. It's justifiable. And they may get arrested for illegal possession of a weapon. So merely having illegal possession of a weapon doesn't mean that the law doesn't apply.
Representative Baxley, I heard you there.
Well, I would be interested to know if he's actually read the bill, because I don't see it that way at all. I see it as protecting those law-abiding citizens who are doing nothing unlawful, who are subject to a violent attack, and are now said that we're going to presume that you have a right to defend yourself, and you're not going to have to sit around and pay attorney's fees and wait for 9 months to see if, or even 6 weeks to see if you're going to be charged for crime and re-victimized by the system. And we're standing with victims and saying, look, you know, the safest thing is to defend yourself when you can, rather than waiting to be a crime victim yourself and seeing yourself as another murder victim or seriously injured person when you had an opportunity to defend yourself. We're going to stand with you.
We hear that. Dennis Bashley, I'm reading here Florida is ranked number two in the nation behind just South Carolina in violent crime, according to the 2003 Census Bureau statistics. Do you think this legislation will push that down, or is it going to stay more or less steady?
I think with as many transient people as we have come through Florida, we are going to have problems with those kind of statistics. And as many people as come here to get away from something wherever they were, we are going to have a certain amount of that to deal with. And I think it will reduce crime if we clearly send the message that we're going to stand against it. We're not going to tolerate it.
And Chief Timoney, we just got another half minute with you. As far as your police force goes, I hear you fearing you're going to be up against more problems. What kind of incidents do you fear you will see?
Oh, no, I'm not expecting an explosion of violence whatsoever. What I'm telling you, you're going to get the occasional case of some homeowner misusing this law. The law is well-intended, by the way. The law is well-intended. I just think it's unnecessary, and I think even a homeowner in his own home, even with a pistol permit, has an obligation to be able to justify a shooting. It shouldn't take, the representative is absolutely correct, it shouldn't take 9 months, but even police officers are under scrutiny and have to justify any time that they discharge their weapons.
And you say...
Well, I have a son who's a deputy sheriff, so I'm very sensitive to that very fact, and we've certainly comb this bill to make sure that law enforcement can do their job. But I would simply ask the chief, if this is such a bad idea, why did the Association of Sheriffs endorse it? Why did the Attorney General endorse it? Why did every police association endorse it? I think they see it as a good move.
Chief Timoney, what's your answer to that?
Let me just respond to that, because I think, first of all, certainly I didn't know the Florida Chiefs endorsed it. I'm a member there. I was not notified that this was being passed. That's number one. Number two, on the face of it, the bill looks good. It really does. However, I don't think that people have thought through the possibilities, particularly in large urban areas.
And we hear it from both sides there. Chief John Timoney, Chief of Police Miami, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
And Dennis Baxley, Representative, Republican, State Representative in the Florida State Legislature, who sponsored the Stand Your Ground bill. Thank you very much for joining us tonight, Representative Baxley.
Thank you. Been a pleasure.
Steve Busquet, the Chief may be opposed to it, but Representative Baxley is correct. It's passed. It's through big time. And Florida has been a laboratory before for national trends.
That's true. There is some significant concerns about this bill by law enforcement, not from just John Timoney down in Miami, but around the state from police officers who feel this could escalate violence. But they were very quiet in the legislature. I want to dispel the notion. I think Chief Timoney might have left with your listeners that this was somehow sneaked through in the dead of night. This issue was thoroughly debated in the Florida legislature. Dennis Baxley was carrying this issue very publicly for weeks. It was there were extensive hearings in the House and the Senate, and as your listeners I think are aware, it's got an enormous amount of national publicity. And so make no mistake, the National Rifle Association has a lot of influence in Tallahassee, not just on this issue, but on a whole range of issues affecting the Second Amendment and gun owners' rights. This only being the latest example, there are more issues coming.
And is it because Floridians, voters, overwhelmingly approve this kind of legislation, or because the NRA is so potent in backing people when they're up for re-election or opposing them?
No, I think it's more the latter. I think the NRA is an important force in election time. We are a state, as I think everybody knows, that's roughly very evenly divided in between Democrats and Republicans, but it is a conservative to moderate state. And gun owners' rights and the rights of the agenda the NRA pushes is particularly important as you get to the central and northern half of Florida, as opposed to more urban southern Florida. Dennis Baxley is from Ocala, a north central part of the state, fairly rural district.
Yep.
And even Democrats in North Florida don't trifle with the rights of gun owners.
Just isn't done, and it's passed in a big way there. And Jeb Bush has apparently quite happily signed it. Steve Busquet, it's been great having you tonight. Thank you so much for joining us.
All right, thanks.
Steve Busquet, Deputy Bureau Chief for the St. Petersburg Times in Tallahassee, Florida. We're talking tonight about Florida's new Stand Your Ground, Shoot 'em Dead If Necessary gun law, and the NRA's push to roll back gun controls nationally. You can join the conversation tonight. Is a society where everyone or many are armed and ready to fire safer? Or is this a Dirty Harry nightmare? Will this make streets safer or turn every sporting match and road rage moment into a shooting match? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined now from Alexandria, Virginia, by Chad Ramsey. He is East Regional Director. East Regional Director for the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence, the nation's largest gun control group. Chad Ramsey, thank you for being with us tonight.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
And from Springfield, Virginia, by Michael Hammond. He's a consultant with the Gun Owners Association of America, a national gun rights organization. Michael Hammond, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Tom.
Mr. Hammond, first to you.
Yeah.
What do you think of what's passed in Florida this week? And do you see this becoming the national norm?
Well, we think it's a modest bill, actually, but a good start. Basically, as the sponsors indicated, if you're someone forcibly and unlawfully breaks into your home, you are presumed, but not irrebuttably presumed, to be in peril. And we don't see how that is really a controvertible notion. Similarly, with respect to the duty to retreat, an individual has no duty to retreat, but he can only respond, quote, force with force, and he can only use deadly force if he, quote, it's reasonably necessary to prevent death or great bodily harm. And so it's relatively modest in terms of its provisions, and there are a lot broader self-defense legislation which has been introduced in the U.S. Congress, but we see it as being a trend nationally as well, and we'd certainly support it in other states.
Chad Ramsey, a model of reason on display in Florida this week and the seeds of a national trend at Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence. How do you feel about it?
I don't think so. We stand with Chief Timoney, and this legislation really flies in the face of common law that's been on the books in the 50 states. I mean, sure, when you're defending your house, it's one thing, but when you extend this type of provision out to the street, you're walking around in the public square, and you make it that much easier for folks to just be able to whip out their gun and fire at someone who may or may not be actually threatening them. You just sort of bring the Wild West onto center stage.
Where were you guys when this was being passed? You know, of course, we know the history of your organization. James Brady, seriously wounded in 1981 in the assassination attempt on President Ronald Reagan. Sarah Brady has been very strong in leading this group in opposition. So what happened in Florida?
Well, this is just another one of those cases where there was something that got through that we weren't able to stop. The NRA and the gun owners certainly are working very hard to get this type of wacky legislation through. And I think sometimes we just assume that common sense is going to prevail. And this is one of the cases in a very conservative, as far as the gun issue goes, state.
Now, I'm reading here reports, Michael Hammond,
yes,
of other state legislatures looking to expand citizen rights to carry, to expand where they can carry firearms. Arizona, the legislature passed, so the governor did not go along with.
Vetoed, yes.
Vetoed, but it would have allowed
American
people.
Democrat governor.
Yes, would have allowed citizens to carry guns into restaurants and bars. Tennessee, I think, has something very similar in the works. Are you looking to expand the turf where gun carrying is permitted?
Absolutely, and I think the strategy will be a red state to blue state strategy. We'll start out with red states, go to blue states. There's not that many jurisdictions, fortunately, in the United States where an individual would be prosecuted for defending himself against death or great bodily harm, but there are some, and Massachusetts is one of those states which has a precedent of a woman actually chased into the basement by a man with a gun. She fires a gun at him, kills him, and is prosecuted for that. So there are certainly states in the country in which it's a problem, and we intend to extend this precedent elsewhere.
Chad Ramsey, are you losing the gun control effort here? The NRA and organizations like Gun Owners of America seem to be riding pretty high.
Well, I think that, yeah, certainly, and as Michael suggests, in red states, certainly they've been more successful. But even in a state like Virginia, which has you know, frequently voted Republican and usually does, they've only met with limited success. And they just recently tried to pass the law that would make it okay to bring guns into bars, and the legislature there stopped that from passing. And you know, I think that kind of common sense thing is going to help. And I think this sort of overreaching attitude, this, trying to pass these laws that are way out of step with what, you know, the American public want, is going to ultimately turn the tide.
Well, we will see. When we come back, we'll hear from our callers. Many have been waiting patiently to join Michael Hammond with Gun Owners Associate, the Gun Owners of America, and Chad Ramsey with the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence. Please stand by. We're talking about Florida's new Stand Your Ground, Shoot 'em Dead gun law, and the national push to let citizens pull their guns much more freely in self-defense. You can join us tonight. Might Columbine and Red Lake and the Milwaukee church shooting have turned out differently if some good citizen had been fully armed and ready to fire? Is it wrong to ask threatened citizens to flee first before firing? Or is it better to stand your ground and blaze away? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Florida's new Stand Your Ground, Shoot 'em Dead gun law and the NRA's push to roll back gun controls nationally. You can join the conversation tonight. Whatever happened to just getting guns off the street? Is meeting force with force the answer? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm joined tonight by Chad Ramsey, East Regional Director for the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence, the nation's largest gun control group, and from Springfield, Virginia, by Michael Hammond, a consultant with Gun Owners of America, a national gun rights organization. Right now, Dan is calling from White Lake, Wisconsin. Hi, Dan, you're on the air.
Let me tell you how things are up in White Lake, Wisconsin.
Yes, sir, let's hear it.
60 miles north of Green Bay.
Yes.
When they were having an issue about did we send enough armed men and women to Iraq to control the war, we put five times that many armed men and women in the woods for the opening day of deer season, and the deer don't even shoot back.
So what do you think about what Florida's doing? Would you like to have it in Wisconsin?
I'm a card-carrying member, the lifetime member of the NRA, and I object to this proposal because I think it's stupid. You're going to have, I disagree with the police chief, I think you're going to have all kinds of people blasting away down there on the streets in Florida. And I'll tell you, up here in Wisconsin, the way things work, there is no, they've tried to pass a concealed carry law many times, and it's always failed.
Because why doesn't the NRA get it through there?
I am not too sure, but I'll tell you that the gun control advocates, I fight with the NRA all the time. As a member of the NRA, I contest with them constantly about their motives and their legislative proposals and so on and so forth. And I think this thing is silly. I'll tell you what, I'm talking to you as somebody who has shot to kill and killed in a military situation.
Yes.
I'm talking to you as somebody who has been shot.
And you think all it's right? Just going to make trouble.
Now, I carry, and in the state of Wisconsin, I carry all the time. My .45 ACP is behind the seat of my pickup truck. It's unloaded, and it's in a case, and that makes it legal. And
you say no thanks to the Stand Your Ground legislation.
No way. Not any place. If I had, and what would happen in Wisconsin, if I got in a defensive situation and I'm a trained individual that knows how to use it.
Yep.
Under the law in Wisconsin, if there were two stories that came out of that incident, and luckily for me, I haven't been in one of those incidents, but if there was two stories, I know damn well I'd be charged.
Dan, we've got it. We thank you for your call. Michael Hammond, let me put it to you. In Florida, of course, critics were saying the measure's so broad it'll encourage fights between neighbors, parents at soccer games, drinking buddies, to escalate into gunfights. You had the representative, Miami Beach Democrat, former federal prosecutor Dan Gelber down there saying it's almost like a duel clause, as in fighting a duel. He said people ought to have to walk away if they can. Our caller from Wisconsin says the same thing. What do you say,
well,
Michael?
Let me make two or three points.
Yes.
Point one is that if you, quote, shoot him dead, quote, your words, not mine, and it's not reasonably necessary to prevent death or great bodily harm, you're going to prison for murder.
But it does say prosecutors must assume that would-be victims feared for their lives if attacked.
Excuse me?
The new legislation says prosecutors, if you were prosecuted, they must automatically presume that would-be victims feared for their lives if attacked.
No, that's actually the section. The one that involves the presumption of peril, that's actually the section that deals with attacks in your home or car. That's a slightly different provision. The no duty to retreat provision allows you to use force with force if reasonably necessary to prevent death or great bodily harm.
And your second point?
And my second point is that if, you know, I hope Dan basically doesn't happen into a situation which happened to my brother, woke up in the middle of the night, bad neighborhood, and a drug addict is standing over his bed.
Mm-hmm.
He takes his gun from his nightstand and basically brandishes it. Incidentally, 1.5 million people, by and large, by brandishing firearms, prevent crimes in the United States each year, according to the FBI.
Now, in that circumstance, under this new legislation, could he have just pulled the gun and fired? He's in bed. There's a drug addict standing over him, middle of the night.
Maybe, maybe not.
Would that have been better?
He is presumed to be in peril.
Yep.
But it's not an irrebuttable presumption. It's not clear that the individual forcibly broke into the house, and has to be both forcibly and unlawfully.
But a lot of leeway there with this new bill.
There's some ambiguity in that mm-hmm. case, in which you're waking up and someone's standing over your bed. But in terms of the horror stories which have been raised by the Miami Herald,
yes.
in terms of the argument that Chad raised, that
yes.
you can shoot someone who may or may not be threatening you, that's just not the case.
Well, it's clearly open to some interpretation there. I want to go to another call here. Ed is calling from Newton, Massachusetts. Hi, Ed. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Just great. Hi, Ed.
Yes, I wanted to say I'm a life member of the NRA myself.
Yes, sir.
One of the things that people, I think, have to keep in mind here, I think that everybody should give the people that do own and carry firearms, you have to give them the benefit of the doubt to some extent and assume that they're going to have some degree of intelligence.
Do you assume that about criminals?
I'm not talking about criminals. I'm talking mm-hmm. about licensed gun owners.
But you assume that they'll use the gun reasonably because they're licensed?
Of course. They already know what the restrictions and the regulations are within the law. They're going to understand that they can't just get into a beef with someone and then just start blasting away. They can't do that.
So let's have some benefit of the doubt. If they're licensed to carry the gun, let me put that to Chad Ramsey. Chad, how about it? Gun carriers, licensed, law-abiding. Let's assume they'll be reasonable.
Sure, but, you know, as Chief Timoney said, law enforcement officers, they undergo serious training. And there are always going to be accidents. You know, they know not to fire their gun in public because of the risk of hitting somebody else, causing ancillary damage. It's just ridiculous to assume that the general public should get this sort of immunity that the law enforcement themselves don't enjoy.
Let me get one more call here. Jessica's calling from Chicago. Hi, Jessica. You're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to zone in on, first of all, I think you guys are really opening up a Pandora's box with this legislation, because I think there's a lot of gray areas in the language that would make it open up a lot of difficulties. I'm a law student, and we just finished studying actually the Bernie Goetz case
mm-hmm.
Of the man in New York City in 1984 who was in the subway. He actually had an unlicensed handgun, but otherwise four black teenagers came up to him in the subway. One of them asked him said, "Give me $5." And he himself interpreted this as a robbery and a threat. He opened fire, killed three of them, paralyzed the fourth, and he was acquitted because the jury interpreted the same type of language as being used in this law, the idea of force being reasonably necessary or defense being reasonably necessary.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He was acquitted in self-defense because the jury believed that he felt reasonably threatened.
And you see this legislation making that more common.
It seems that way to me. It seems that it's even looser, this Florida legislation. And I'm just wondering, for the guests, the fact that, I mean, in this case, the fact that the man believed that his life was threatened was more important than whether or not it objectively was.
Jessica, our time is short. Let us pick it straight up. Michael Hammond, we've just got a minute left here. What do you say?
Several things. First of all, the testimony was that the kids were, in fact, going to kill him. They had a long list of criminal crimes. Bernie Goetz, in the end, wasn't acquitted entirely, and he ended up going to prison.
Mm-hmm.
And the Florida law, finally, does require that you objectively be in danger, not that you perceive that you're in danger.
I'm afraid I still get hung up on that. I see a perception issue here. But Chad Ramsey, finally to you tonight. Where are we headed here? Is the new presumption of the land going to be in citizens' minds and criminals' minds that if people get pushy, guns are going to come out and be used legally? Is this a kind of Wild West model?
Sure, potentially. I mean, any time you introduce a gun into a situation, you automatically raise it from a situation that could be irritating. You might have some pushing and shoving fisticuffs to a potentially deadly situation.
But might it not tamp down crime because criminals would be afraid to push their own heat around?
Criminals have indicated that they don't have this kind of fear. You've seen over the last 4 years that gun homicides have gone up every year, and this is after a long trend and they have gone down. And I think that we need to stem that tide, and the way to do that is not by introducing more guns into the public. It's by cracking down on the folks who shouldn't have guns.
Well, there's where we stand tonight. Chad Ramsey with the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence. Thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Thanks, Tom.
And Michael Hammond speaking us tonight for the Gun Owners of America. Mr. Hammond, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. In a moment, a look ahead to tonight's live primetime presidential press conference. This is On Point. Just 10 minutes from now, President Bush will step up to an East Room podium and face the White House press corps in a rare primetime press conference. White House spokesmen say he wants to talk about energy policy and Social Security. He's also likely to face tough questions about Tom DeLay, the budget, UN nominee John Bolton, and more. It is a challenging moment for President Bush and for his second-term agenda. His approval rating hovers around 47%. A recent ABC Washington Post poll shows 64% of Americans disapprove of the way he is handling Social Security. There's infighting among Republican lawmakers, and some have publicly disagreed with the president on the issues. We'll bring you the president's press conference live in a few minutes. Right now, we're joined by Susan Page, Washington editor for USA Today. Susan, thanks a lot for being with us tonight.
I'm delighted to be with you.
So why this press conference? Why now?
Well, you know, the president has been having press conferences just about once a month since he was reelected. That's been a pleasant surprise to the reporters who cover him.
Remind us what the first term was like.
He did press conferences very rarely, historic low for modern presidents. So this has been a change by the president, and he's been pretty relaxed at these. I think he's been pretty effective at them. But I think he's having a news conference right now because they really need to get this Social Security debate off the dime. It seems to be heading to a stalemate on Capitol Hill. It's his biggest domestic priority for his second term, and an issue in which he has already expended a lot of political capital.
Remind us where that stands. His 60-day, 60-city barnstorm, I guess, would technically be up this Sunday. What has he achieved of what he hoped to achieve in that effort?
Well, now, the White House says he has achieved something by making people more aware of the problems that Social Security faces. And he's also talked a lot about his private investment accounts. But in our polling, the USA Today CNN polling, we found that, in fact, people feel a little less urgency about Social Security than they did when this tour began. We think that's because Democrats have been talking about the problem in a way that making it sound more manageable, something less like a crisis. And all the polls have shown that support for his notion of individual investment accounts have gone down. In our poll now, they're opposed by Americans by about 2-1.
He has said, or we're told, that he's going to roll out some more detail tonight. The president's been reluctant to get very specific about what he'd like to see. There's been conversations this week on Capitol Hill. Is it possible that he'll put forward some kind of compromise proposal that, in an effort to force Democrats to respond? They've pretty much stayed on the sidelines and thrown spitballs here.
You know, he's not going to withdraw his plan for individual investment accounts. That's what Democrats say they need to hear. But our understanding is he is going to endorse a plan by a Boston business executive, Bob Posen, to have progressive indexing, which means that if you're a higher income worker, your initial benefit would be based on the rise in prices over your working life, not wages. And that doesn't sound like a big deal, but it does mean that over a decade or two, if this plan were in place, benefits for higher income workers would be cut by about 25%. So it has a big impact on higher income workers. Lower income workers, the 30% of workers at the bottom of the income scale, would continue to have their initial benefit calculated based on the increase in wages, so they wouldn't be affected.
Just the, so you're saying the top two-thirds of Americans in terms of income would receive less over time in Social Security payouts.
That's right. And it would be less so for people in the middle, but for people at the high end who are now getting the maximum Social Security benefit, the effect would be greatest. And the argument is that those are the people best able to sustain a cut in benefits. Of course, those people might disagree with that.
Will that put Democrats in a position where they've got to come out and begin to really negotiate with the Republicans?
You know, I'd be surprised if Democrats felt that way, because they've had been completely united, not a single Democratic defector in the past 60 days, saying that the president must take individual accounts off the table before they start to negotiate. And that's because they're concerned that they'll get a kind of bait and switch where they'll negotiate about solvency and suddenly personal accounts will be back on the table. So I would be surprised if Democrats took this deal, but I guess we'll find out after we hear exactly what it is the president says.
Susan, we're also told that the President Bush will speak about energy policy tonight. Of course, gasoline and oil prices very high. He's been talking about this in recent days. Do you expect anything new tonight?
No. We expect him to reiterate the points he made earlier this week and has been making in recent days in arguing for his energy plan and calling for moving again toward nuclear energy, something that the country hasn't. I guess there's been no nuclear plant built since about 1973.
Long time.
A long time. But we expect that not to break new ground.
He hasn't exactly got hosannas for what he's proposed, even from the energy world in the last couple of days. People are saying these things will not bring the price down.
You know, it's tough being a second-term president. People aren't as scared of you. People in your own party are less likely to bend to your will. And I think that's something that President Bush is finding, just as his predecessors in second terms have found.
He's been throwing his arms in recent days around Tom DeLay and around the nominee for U.N. Ambassador John Bolton. Do you expect him to stand up firm for them again this evening?
Yes, absolutely. The administration's made it clear that they're going to stand with John Bolton, and actually are increasingly confident that he will be confirmed. And a big step on Tom DeLay with House Republicans agreeing to go back to those old ethics rules. You know, that means that there will be an investigation of DeLay, but it kind of diffuses that issue for the time being, because there is now going to be a process in place for an inquiry to go forward.
How would you describe the moment the president finds himself at right now? In his first term, he very rarely faced dissension in his own ranks, not even that much from Democrats. It seems like there's a fair bit around him at the moment. Is this new terrain for George W. Bush?
I think it's a difficult moment for him. As you mentioned earlier, his approval ratings have been down and kind of steadily down since his reelection. He has less sway over all the members of his party. There's increasing attention to who's going to run next time, you know, possibly including the Massachusetts governor.
Mitt Romney.
You know,
yeah.
Yes. And, you know, time kind of ticks on. He's got this big proposal for Social Security, but he's having a tough time selling it. And presidents find, I think, in second terms that the terrain is different and that the window of opportunity closes pretty quickly.
How's George W. Bush appear to be handling that change in chemistry? Can you tell?
Well, he's seemed pretty relaxed. He's been pretty effective on the road. These events are quite controlled, including the audiences. But, I think that some of the likability that helped him be elected over John Kerry, you see that coming through. And we've seen that in the news conferences he's done since his reelection.
Well, we'll see another one in just a couple of minutes. Susan Page, Washington editor for USA Today, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
You're very welcome.
Live presidential press conference coming up from the East Room of the White House in just a moment. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.